Station radio show, the September 4th, 2022. The site is theliberationstation.com, and we are streaming live. The stream is going strong on Facebook, facebook.com/wearechange.tampa or facebook.com/wearechangetampa. You can just drop the dot. And the chat room is over at the listen/archives page at theliberationstation.com. Glad to be back with you this week. Last week there were some technical issues at the network, so weren't able to put the show, but glad it's on the road, and let's hope all the electrons flow smoothly in the right direction for the network and the show to keep going and keep growing. And let's start out with the America's Frontline News this past September, just the last one, September 2nd, 2 days ago. America's Frontline News roundup from America's Frontline Doctors. And you might remember Simone Gold is serving, as they say, 60 days in a federal penitentiary for nothing illegal, but she accepted a plea deal for being among the January 6th, 2021 attendees. And there's videos of her. Don't see anything that she did wrong. And then we'll get into some recent science on ivermectin being very successful, a study that was just published on ivermectin helping COVID. But if that clip number one is ready, go right ahead, please, and play it. Otherwise, I'll say a few more things. Okay, I guess I'll say a few more things until the clip gets rolling. That's clip number one, America's Frontline News Roundup from America's Frontline Doctors. Pardon me. And we'll also get into the last edition of The High Wire with Del Bigtree, where he has his regular appearance of Jeffrey Jackson. All right. Okay, I heard you, Sam. So I'll introduce that High Wire clip when we get into that and some of the highlights of what he's going to be talking about, which is a lot more time spent on other than COVID and COVID shots for once on the High Wire. I've never seen them cover so much other than COVID during the Jeffrey Jackson segment especially, but they weave it in well. And so again, this is America's Frontline News Roundup being played for just 6.5 minutes, next 6.5 minutes here. And if you'd like to get on the lines, they are 512-248-8252. That's 512-248-8252. Toll free, 800-313-9443. 800-313-9443. In just a moment, I will be sharing the Facebook live feed from facebook.com/wearechangetampa to the Republic Broadcasting Network Facebook page, so you can grow to expect it there. facebook.com/republicbroadcasting. That's facebook.com/republicbroadcasting. And so without further ado, America's Frontline News Roundup from 2 days ago.
I'm Mordecai Sound, and this is your weekly news roundup from America's Frontline News. 22,000 Colorado residents Tuesday lost control of temperatures in their homes for hours when they were locked out of their smart thermostats during a so-called energy emergency. Temperatures climbed into the 90s Tuesday, but when Xcel customers tried to turn up their air conditioning, they saw a message on the thermostat saying the temperature was locked due to an energy emergency. Xcel confirmed to Contact Denver 7 that 22,000 customers who had signed up for the Colorado AC Rewards program were locked out of their smart thermostats for hours on Tuesday, saying they chose to be part of the voluntary program based on incentives. According to leaked documents obtained by Project Veritas from inside the New York City Police Department, new laws that took effect September 1st mandate that anyone carrying a firearm is presumed to be carrying unlawfully until proven otherwise. The new laws designate public venues as sensitive and others as restricted. Even though a person may be licensed to carry a firearm, they may not bring a firearm to a sensitive location. All private property, residential and commercial, not on the sensitive location list is considered restricted. The Food and Drug Administration this month updated its guidance to recommend that anyone who receives a negative result from an at-home COVID-19 antigen test continue testing until it shows positive. The recommendation applies whether the individual is experiencing symptoms or not. On its website, the FDA says, quote, "The U.S. Food and Drug Administration is advising people to perform repeat or serial testing following a negative result on any at-home COVID-19 antigen test. The FDA recommends repeat testing following a negative result whether or not you have COVID-19 symptoms." The Quidel-Sofia SARS antigen test insert says the test was authorized for individuals who are suspected of COVID-19 by their healthcare provider within the first 5 days of the onset of symptoms, not for an asymptomatic person. However, the agency does not specify that their recommendation is only for those who may have been exposed to the virus, suggesting that everyone should test repeatedly until one shows positive. A study examining mRNA vaccine serious adverse events has been peer-reviewed in the journal Vaccine. The study found serious adverse events of special interest following mRNA COVID-19 vaccination in randomized trials in adults. It appears to be the first of its kind to provide hard data on the excess risk of adverse side effects of the Pfizer and Moderna mRNA vaccines in an independent randomized controlled trial. Study authors include researchers from Stanford University, University of Maryland, and UCLA. The study provides a list of confirmed adverse events of the respective mRNA vaccines. And a new study published in Science Advances investigating the effects of COVID vaccines on menstrual cycles has revealed that 42% of women with regular cycles bled more heavily following vaccination, and 66% of postmenopausal women experienced breakthrough bleeding following shots. The study's authors noted that their findings, quote, "align with other recent studies that show significant menstrual cycle responsiveness to SARS-CoV-2 vaccination." Two runners died and 74 were hospitalized Sunday during the Comrades Marathon in South Africa. As of Wednesday, 9 runners remained in hospital. The two fatalities include 31-year-old Amzamo Mtembu, who suffered a sudden heart attack during the 90-kilometer downrun and was transferred to Westville Hospital, where he was pronounced dead. The other fatality, 47-year-old Fakamisa Nchiza, had difficulty at the halfway mark and was pronounced dead on the scene. The tragedy follows a similar one in May, when 16 people were taken to hospital after running the Brooklyn Half Marathon, including 4 runners who collapsed and a 30-year-old runner who died of cardiac arrest. The Australian Bureau of Statistics last week recorded deaths across Australia running at 16.6% above average, representing almost 11,000 more dead Australians than the average from recent years. An initiative funded in part by the Rockefeller Foundation is investing an initial $7.2 million in behavioral research focused on convincing more people to get the COVID-19 injections, the foundation announced last week. The initiative received the grant toward the costs of launching a research consortium to drive acceptance and uptake of COVID-19 vaccination efforts and provide insights to counter health mis- and disinformation. Included in the initiative is $7.2 million in direct research funds to 12 teams working in 17 countries to increase COVID vaccination rates. Social and behavioral scientists are tasked with developing, quote, "locally tailored solutions with community-crafted messaging." Teams will study how to harness influencers to counter misinformation and censor dissenting viewpoints on social media through network-transforming interventions for reducing the spread of health misinformation online. A California bill that would allow the California Medical Board to punish medical professionals who openly disagree with government health authorities successfully passed the state Senate Monday and awaits Governor Gavin Newsom's signature. The bill charges the California Medical Board with punishing healthcare professionals who, quote, "disseminate medical disinformation in the form of treatment or advice." The legislation cites mainstream media reports as evidence that criticizing COVID injections is misinformation. The bill comes even after the CDC this month removed any distinction in its guidance between the vaccinated and unvaccinated. Neither the bill's authors, nor the news outlets they cite, nor the California Medical Board are headed by medical professionals. Mainstream media last week spontaneously began to blame President Donald Trump for the spate of deaths following the COVID-19 vaccines. The shift occurred days after InfoWars founder Alex Jones predicted the vaccine would become Trump's undoing, saying the COVID injections may be the one fight Trump cannot win. Trump, most recently in July, called for, quote, drug dealers to receive the death penalty. Responding to Jones's warning, Trump doubled down to defend his vaccine policy, saying, I believe what I did was good. It's an effective vaccine. For more top news and analysis, go to our website at americasfrontlinenews.com. You've been listening to Mordechai Sohn's and America's Frontline Doctors Frontline News.
And we're back here, Liberation Station Radio Show. And next, I wanted to point out this great article I just learned about on the High Wire, the last edition of the High Wire with Mel Bigtree. At the start of the show, he put it in, so I'm doing the same. This is the last edition of his show, which was September 1st, 2022. And the site is thehighwire.com. It's on every Thursday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern. And I'm just going to read the results, and when I do, I'm even going to summarize that and throw that up on the screen here for the Facebook Live viewers, that ivermectin is a very effective in the study that was just published August 31st, 2022, very effective against COVID-19. It's entitled Regular Use of Ivermectin as Prophylaxis, which is preventative or preemptive treatment, for COVID-19 led up to a 92% reduction in COVID-19 mortality rate in a dose-response manner. And that's very important, very significant to note that it's dose-response. It shows that it's a medicine that, or the agent that they're testing, which is ivermectin in this case, to be the causative factor in reducing morbidity and mortality. Results, continuing the subtitle of this study, is results of a prospective observational study of a strictly controlled population of 88,012 subjects. And I'll just read the results, and I'm going to omit some of the data within it, so you'll notice that if you're watching on the video stream. And the results reads, among 223,128 subjects from the city of Itajaí, 159,560 were 18 years old or up and were not infected by COVID-19 until July 7th, 2020, from which 45,716, or that's 28.7% did not use, and 71.3% did use ivermectin. Among ivermectin users, 29.8% used irregularly, that's up to 60 milligrams, and I assume that's per day, and 7.3% used regularly, that's more than 180 milligrams. The remaining 71,548 participants were not included in the analysis. COVID-19 infection rate was 49% lower for regular users. Then that's 3.4% of whom were infected. Then non-users is 6.64%. And skipping ahead, the infection rate was 32% lower for irregular users than non-users. Among COVID-19 participants, regular users were older and had a higher prevalence of type 2 diabetes and hypertension than irregular and non-users. And I'm going to interject here. So apparently that's because they're concerned with taking their medicine. They They don't like feeling sick, being sick, so they are more likely to be a regular user, apparently, in the city of Hetajay. And continuing the results of the study, the hospitalization rate was reduced by 100% in regular users compared to both. Oh, let me back up a little bit. Skipped over a sentence. After PSM, the matched analysis contained 283 subjects in each group of non-users and regular users, between regular users and irregular users, and 1,542 subjects between non-users and irregular users. So, clearing out some of the chaff of the subjects there. And this is important, though. The hospitalization rate was reduced by 100% in regular users compared to both irregular users and non-users, and by 29% among irregular users compared to non-users. Mortality rate was 92% lower in regular users than non-users, and 84% lower than irregular users. While irregular users had a 37% lower mortality rate reduction than non-users of ivermectin. Risk of dying from COVID-19 was 86% lower among regular users than non-users, and 72% lower than irregular users, while irregular users had a 51% reduction compared to non-users. So that's a pretty broad study, and very conclusively, again, showing ivermectin as being very effective for treating COVID-19 on a prophylactic basis. I know some skeptics at first who were for ivermectin didn't believe it was useful prophylactically on a preemptive basis, you know, meaning you want to take it before you get the disease that you're trying to treat against. Though most of those have changed their mind. Most of the doctors, like a local doctor on a local radio station, Dr. Fred Arvey, has changed his mind not only on that, but also on July 4th, decided to come out and decided to tell the world that he is no longer supporting COVID shots and is anti-mandatory vaccines. And that's very positive news. So I encourage you folks to go out there, try to persuade by calling in and emailing talk shows with the information, and you might just be surprised at your power of persuasion. So that's very good news for ivermectin. And you might remember that Dr. Meryl Nass, a doctor in Maine, who had her medical license suspended for 30 days for prescribing ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, and was forced to undergo a medical exam, published a lot of good information on ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, how the studies were rigged to kill the patients, to defame and discredit both of those drugs. And she has a Substack at I'm not sure if it's not in my history here. I'll have to come up with it, folks. But it's over. If you do a search of Dr. Meryl Nass, Meryl, last name is N as in Nancy, A-S-S, Sam, and ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, you'll find her great information. I think she's the single, I mentioned her, I think she's the single best source on how those studies were designed to kill the patients. And, you know, it's really interesting, very rewarding also this week that, last week or two, I think it was, that not only National Institutes of Health, but CDC are recommending investigating ivermectin for treatment of COVID, despite it being on National Institutes of Health website for, I don't know how long, well over a year, for refugees, treating them. And let's see, I don't hear a commercial coming up, but let me know if we're going to skip the commercial. Next week. Okay, I thought I heard something. All right, we'll be right back after this break for the Liberation Station Radio Show with a brand new set of topics, so stay tuned. We'll be right back.
For the past 14 years, it's been my privilege to host the National Intel Report on RBN, to offer a platform to interview exceptional guests, to provoke critical thought, and examine evidence, whether real, fake, or somewhere in between, and allow our audience to call in and participate with your input and questions, in order to help us all reach an educated decision and arrive at our own truth. Our world has changed. It's now been turned on its head. Real is now considered fake, and mainstream fake is now pushed as real, rather than any clear thinking, consensus, or rationale.
Those few remaining beacons of light, the ones still shining through the mainstream media lies, propaganda, and deception, are being viciously attacked at every level through attempts at censorship, threatening advertisers, jailing hosts, and even killing journalists brave enough to speak the truth to you. We are in a war for our very freedom and existence, and through these despicable acts, freedom haters, collectivists, and communitarians have shown they will stop at nothing to blot out these last few beacons of light. Truth is becoming increasingly more difficult to unmask, just as the term unmasking itself is spoken by those usually anonymous sources. They promote their lies, wishing to mask the truths by ignoring it, vilifying it, or conspiratorializing it into a black hole abyss.
Regrettably, RBN has reached the tipping point, and through internal audit and actuarial review, it has now been determined that the only life raft of survival to this network is to go the way of PBS, that being audience-supported. Like a cornered animal, the left with veracity is pulling out all the stops with every effort to effectively blacken our beacon forever. Help us, folks. Help yourselves. Don't let our light stop shining. Our motto has always been, because you can handle the truth. It's time to review your budget, folks. If you want the truth to keep flowing through RBN, go to republicbroadcasting.org and become a regular monthly donor of 30, 40, 50, or 100 or more a month and ensure you keep the truth flowing.
Wanna breathe, wanna move, and not ever feel afraid. Wanna live in a place where the truth still finds a way to rise and advise, and when everything is lies, you bring. Cause there's nowhere you can run and still feel safe.
I think the world's gone crazy. I think the world's gone crazy. I think the world's gone crazy.
Yeah.
We're back here on Liberation Station Radio Show. Do you read me there in the studio? Network, I assume I'm on the air. Chris Steiner back here with you this September 4th, 2022. Studio, let me know if you can read me. Well, I'll continue on then. I'll just assume that I'm going out over the air, and I'll call in. And Sam, if you can read me, message me, or just break in the show and let me know if you could. Otherwise, I will continue on. I'm going to call you up there in the studio, put myself on mute, I guess, for Skype, if you pick up, or see what's going on here, folks. No, we're going out over the web, but don't know if we're going out over RBN. Well, I guess the best way to tell would be to play the RBN stream and see what's going on there. I'm not able to reach the studio at the moment. And we have about 5 minutes to commercial. So, might have had a... Sam, am I going out over the air? Okay, I've confirmed I'm on the air, and let's, instead of playing a clip, I'll get into this next story from the Defender magazine just from 5 days ago, childrenshealthdefense.org, Defender magazine. The latest COVID booster shots will be released before human testing is complete, and more. This was written by the Defender staff. Throw it up there on the screen for the video feed, and... Starting out, the New York Post reported the Food and Drug Administration is expected to approve new COVID-19 booster shots this week before the vaccines are tested on humans, according to a new report by the Wall Street Journal. The new boosters are similar, pardon me, my microphone fell. The new boosters are similar to the COVID vaccines currently available in the U.S. with minor modifications that protect recipients from the latest version of Omicron variant. And sorry, folks, I have three computers I'm trying to pay attention to. Instead of waiting on data from testing in humans, the agency will use data from trials in mice, as well as the real-world evidence of the safety of currently available COVID vaccines and test results from earlier iterations of boosters targeting older strains to evaluate the new boosters, FDA Commissioner Dr. Robert Califf said. Some health experts are wary of the decision to release the shots without completed human trials. In June, two experts penned an op-ed demanding that the FDA not rush through the rollout of the newest shots. And that was published in Stat News, that op-ed. I'm going to back up. That was back to June 29th. You might remember those two FDA officials who quit. And I'm going to have to back up to show this on this article on screen for the video. But continuing the article, quote, "I'm uncomfortable that we would move forward, that we would give millions or tens of millions of doses to people based on mouse data," end quote, one of the authors, Paul Offit, told the journal. Moderna's COVID vaccine lawsuit looks ahead to future markets. Axios reported Moderna's unexpected patent infringement lawsuit against Pfizer and BioNTech over COVID vaccine technology says more about the future market for mRNA shots than the current state of the pandemic. With the federal government's vaccine purchases likely to drop off, experts see top manufacturers jockeying for customers and using the technology for other conditions. Quote, "Moderna looks at Pfizer's success as a threat to market share," end quote, said Jacob Sherkow, an authority on intellectual property in the Life Sciences University of Illinois College of Law and College of Medicine. Quote, "Filing suit may slow that down and be one way to ensure Moderna's share of the product is going to remain a leader in this particular space," end quote. Back here on the Liberation Station radio show, Chris Steiner.
Standing in line for the vaccine shot. I hope I get mine, cause believe it or not, I think I might die. Guess I'll take what they got. My brain's too fried, so I give it no thought. Because the FDA said it's safe for me. The drug companies claim that it's made for me. And the government, they're gonna pay for me.
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news. Real talk. Real people. Because you can handle the truth.
It's time to double down. I'm Peter Serafine, and yesterday's Liberty Minute ruffled some feathers, so I'm going all in today. If I take out a loan and make a bad investment, I still have to pay back the loan. Real estate, business, stocks, crypto, the investment doesn't matter. So why should student loans be an exception? College is an investment. You choose to go to college. You select your course of study. You pick the school. You decided to take out the loan. You are responsible. Oh, but the school lied. Or my advisor was horrible. Yeah, that's unfortunate. I'm sorry. But it's still your debt. And your debt is your responsibility and only your responsibility. I am tired of my hard-earned tax dollars going to bail out the bad decisions of banks, businesses, or individuals. Find more news and commentary at liberty-lighthouse.com. Until tomorrow, Cibus Pashem, Parabellum.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Hey there, are you going to wait till the cows come home to get your new Ease-Off drop-in lift?
What in the world is an Ease-Off drop-in lift?
Our Ease-Off is a new tool to increase production for your meat processing company that will get that whole hog or half a beef on or off your rail with our remote control.
That sounds great, but can I afford it?
Sure, and the Ease-Off installs fast. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue, speed up your line, and increase profits.
Okay, I'm convinced. Where can I get my Ease-Off?
Go to easeoff.com. That's EAZEOFF.com. And hurry, because we're offering free shipping for a limited time. Easeoff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
Ease-Off LLC, 417-932-6419.
Welcome to the revolution. All the walls are breaking down. It's time you had a taste of losing. Time the tables turn around. I see a glimpse of a recognition, but it's too little, it's too late. And what you thought was your best decision just became your worst mistake. What I mean is why.
It's sweeter to you too. Let's keep the sweetness of freedom alive, folks. If we take the information that you hear on this and other shows, especially here on RBN, such a valuable treasured trove of terrific data, and spread it around to those who don't know any better, who had no idea that it even existed, and you might end up persuading them and end up with another RFK Jr. who was constantly, diligently, persistently pestered by mothers on the mercury issue. And, you know, he transitioned from water safety into vaccine safety when it comes to Dangers of Mercury. Or Del Bigtree, who came around apparently on his own when he was a producer for CBS at the Doctors and decided that since he was being shut down, that he was being squelched, that he decided to leave and his own good conscience. So you have to give folks a chance, give them the information. And thanks, Merbailey, in the chat room for letting me know that, reminding me that the Substack for Dr. Merrill Nass, I was trying to find before the last break, was merylnass.substack.com. How simple could it have been? merylnass.substack.com. And I wanted to also express my gratitude that Fauci is out the door in December if he follows along with his plans to retire. You might remember that back in June of last year, 2021, he, or maybe you'd never heard about his new book that was set to be released that would allegedly offer universal advice to live by, quote unquote, which I think would be a horror for the world. Be something you'd probably want to read around Halloween time. Somebody at the door, instead of getting a treat, maybe that'd be the worst trick they could get, is a recitation of his book. Maybe we'll never know what it has to say, because it was scrubbed by Amazon and Barnes & Noble after Fauci's Freedom of Information Act requested emails were released. And that was because, thanks to the likes of BuzzFeed, Washington Post, which of course is owned by Jeff Bezos, who owns Amazon, but surprisingly they did some decent journalism. But I think the best Freedom of Information Act requests were done by Informed Consent Action Network, which is headed by Del Bigtree. And BuzzFeed also had some good requests as well. So Fauci's new book was never published, due merely for his own words and, of course, communication sent to him, where he was made aware of things that he could no longer, he could no longer claim ignorance, like lab leak origins being a likelihood. I made this meme that I'm going to throw up on screen here and describe it for the audience. It's back then, when this article came out, June 2nd, 2021, from justthenews.com, and it's entitled "Fauci's Upcoming Book Scrubbed on Amazon, Barnes & Noble Amid Backlash, Book Will Allegedly Offer, Quote, Universal Advice to Live By," end quote. Article by Daniel Payne, June 2nd, 2022. And it shows, I'll throw up on the screen now, this meme I made where it's a fisherman holding a huge 3-foot salmon, it looks like. And the fisherman has Fauci, because I put Fauci's face on the body there to make the meme. And Fauci is the fisherman. The fish is labeled his new book. And the big bear behind, you know, Fauci's smiling, facing the camera, holding up the fish and his prized catch. And little does he know that there's a huge bear behind him labeled his emails. And so I thought I would make that meme, spread it around. And now especially so with RFK Jr.'s book out, The Real Anthony Fauci. Now when you do a web search for the term Fauci's new book, it's still nowhere to be found. But Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s The Real Anthony Fauci tops the search results. So that's a bit of irony for us today in celebrating Fauci's exit. Fauci in lockup and see what he thinks about it until he becomes a songbird and spills the beans on his sources. But if he were to be tried correctly, he would be facing the possibility of so many life sentences that unless he were offered just blanket immunity to almost all the charges, he wouldn't have any incentive to be a songbird. So, yeah, there's so many crimes that RFK Jr. has outlined. But, you know, I recommend calling into talk shows often, and when you do call into talk shows who are pro-Fauci to criticize him, then you might want, they might allow you to speak longer if you preface the call with just first pointing out that the significance of Amazon and Barnes & Noble still deciding to not sell his book based only on his emails. And then you can get into so much other dirt. You know, hey, if Amazon and Barnes & Noble have given us permission to criticize him, well, maybe then the handlers over there at that particular radio station or network will allow the host to let the caller keep speaking. And you know, there's really just no other reason for Amazon and Barnes & Noble to have stopped carrying his book and deciding to not carry it again. This information fortunately snowballs and catches on. So we can be thankful for his exit and hopefully his future indictments. Well, let's get Sam in the control room. If you can get ready clip number two. This is a clip of Dr. Peter McCullough and his co-author, John Lee, co-authors of The Courage to Face COVID-19, being interviewed by Roman Balmakoff of Facts Matter by the Epoch Times. And I wasn't able to find a better quality audio online other than Peter McCullough's own podcast, which is the McCullough Report. You can hear over at America Out Loud. His weekly podcast is every Monday. So this is from the last podcast, August 29th, 2022. And it's going to be just about 20 minutes, a little over 20 minutes. So we're going to have to run into the next commercial and cut it before the commercial and resume a small part of it afterwards. And you may remember I had the honor of interviewing both Dr. McCullough and John Leake on National Intel Report here on Republic Broadcasting Network on the June 8th, 2022 edition in the first hour. The author of Courage to Face COVID-19, CourageToFaceCovid.com is their site. CourageToFaceCovid.com is the site for that book. John Leake is a true crime, national best-selling true crimes reporter. And Dr. Peter McCullough's website is Peter McCullough, and his new website, I just found out about it being up the last couple, I think it's about a month or two old. It's PeterMcCulloughMD.com, PeterMcCulloughMD.com. And again, this is Roman Balmakoff of Facts Matter by the Epoch Times. Recent interview, I believe it was just at the end of August, but I can't confirm it because this is the only audio I can find on Peter McCullough's own podcast, interview with John Leake and Dr. McCullough. So please play that clip. Yeah, play clip number two if that's ready.
So some of the things you mentioned, I can imagine somebody chalking that up to incompetence. Let's say the monoclonal antibodies, you can say, well, that was a supply chain issue. They didn't know where it should go and when. Do you have any examples of let's say, actual either gross negligence or wherein someone maybe internally is saying one thing, but publicly they're saying the exact opposite?
Well, I mean, the most notable example of the suppression of early treatment, and we document this in our book, in the early days was hydroxychloroquine. And what's fascinating is even the CDC, even a CDC researcher in 2005, when SARS emerged from China in 2003, they were actually discovering, including CDC researchers, that hydroxychloroquine had this antiviral and anti-inflammatory effect. There are multiple papers that were published about this in the academic literature. But then when SARS-CoV-2 emerges from China, they quickly establish that genetically it's a very similar virus. But all of this literature, all of the scientific research on these repurposed drugs like hydroxychloroquine, complete silence. And the French microbiologist Didier Raoul, a professor at Marseille, he was actively harassed, censored, and ultimately he was dismissed from his position at the hospital. So you see from the outset a suppression. And this goes all the way up to even simple things like nasal hygiene, which is, you know, goes back thousands of years. Even that, the FTC and the FDA have suppressed.
I want to give an example of something that was very intentional and injurious to the population. Remdesivir. Remdesivir was studied in randomized trials, the best ones done, and then the whole synthesis of the data done by the World Health Organization. And in November of 2020, the World Health Organization meets and has a critical consensus conference with ethicists, critical care physicians, European Society of Critical Care, and they declare remdesivir should not be used to treat COVID-19 because it leads to greater numbers of deaths, kidney injury, and hepatic injury. What does the United States do? The HHS, they put a 20% bonus on remdesivir if hospitals use it in the United States. The United States goes against the WHO and administers remdesivir as a frontline therapy, leading to greater numbers of Americans dying in hospitals. It can't be any more clear than that.
What was their front-end justification for doing that?
The front-end justification was, this is the only in-hospital emergency use authorized drug we have, and they simply were not going to pay attention to any data that was not going along with their narrative. And what the relationships were with Gilead, the NIH, our director of the National Allergy Immunology Infectious Disease Branch, HHS, that's for investigative journalists to figure out. But I can tell you, as a doctor, I use lots of drugs in the hospital. I've never had an antibiotic or antiviral where the entire hospital stay would get a 20% bonus. Americans should be asking questions.
What you just mentioned would be my next question, because in theory, at least, these alphabet agencies should have as their clients or as the people they serve, the people of this country, not the big pharmaceutical companies like Gilead, right? But it seems like if the WHO had this study showing that remdesivir is not a viable option in this particular use case, I just wonder why they would go so far against it to the point that it actually incentivized people to use it with a bonus.
Yeah, this is the most astonishing. I mean, I understand why Dr. McCullough has mentioned this. It's just plainly astonishing to see the suppression of all of these repurposed medications that have been FDA approved for 60, 30, 40. I mean, hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin, they're both WHO essential medications. Remdesivir is this failed Ebola drug that Anthony Fauci at the NIAID had this interest in, was distributing grant money to try and develop this thing. As Robert F. Kennedy Jr. states in his book, remdesivir was a drug looking for a pandemic. And look, it's patented. So the hospitals, Gilead Sciences gets $3,000 per treatment course, and then the hospitals get this 20% bonus on the entire hospital bill per the CARES Act of March 2020. So it's just out in the open corruption. And what I want to emphasize, and Dr. McCullough discovered, and I discovered this as we researched our book, it's all out in the open. I mean, it's not like these guys are meeting, you know, with drawn blinds in the back of an Italian restaurant in New York or something, and kind of with cigars conspiring. No, it's all out in the open. The documents are published. The grants are out. Video simulations of these pandemic planning seminars at Johns Hopkins in Georgetown, in which they're openly discussing this. Another element that I will quickly mention is the enormously powerful role of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation in funding and organizing these public-private partnerships for pandemic response. They've had an enormous hand in all of this, particularly a new institution that they founded in 2017 called CEPI, Center for Epidemic Preparedness Innovations, expressly states in its preliminary business plan, which is published, anyone can see it, their pandemic response for the imminent pandemic that's coming. And the only thing in that business plan is vaccine development and deployment. There is not a single reference to treatment. So when SARS-CoV-2 emerges and comes to our shores, the CEPI business plan was activated. It's all there. It's plainly out in the open.
That actually would make sense in regards to what we saw with the advertising campaign that came out of the FDA and the CDC, because I know that even after, let's say, a full year and a half of a multi-billion dollar ad campaign from the government, I know people that either contracted COVID after getting vaccinated or their family members contracted COVID after getting vaccinated, and they really did not even know what to do with them, because it seemed like the government's position was, well, wait until it gets so bad that you have to go to the hospital and then, you know, they'll take care of you there. What do you think leads to that? Because in theory, again, maybe I'm too naive, but it feels like these alphabet agencies should be explaining to people how to stay healthy. Even, let's say, you get COVID, it's like, okay, well, these are the things you should do, even like get rest or something like that. But it's not like that. It's like, wait, hang around at home until you get it sick enough, then go on a ventilator in the hospital. That's what it seemed like.
It's inexplicable. The agencies to this day still have not given America a care plan of what to do when they contract COVID-19. I can tell you the advertising campaign or the public health messaging campaign for the vaccine was built on three fraudulent false claims. The first claim was that the vaccines were going to stop the infection, and if you took the vaccine, you couldn't get the infection. Our president said this. The major liberal media said this. People remember Rachel Maddow saying this on MSNBC. The second false claim, a fraudulent claim, is that it would block transmission. If you took it, you couldn't give it to anyone else. And that became so obviously not the case that our CDC director came out and said that and said, listen, it doesn't stop transmission. The final false and fraudulent claim is that the vaccines make it a milder illness, that they reduce hospitalization and death. And I can tell you, in randomized clinical trials, in order to make that claim, a randomized trial would have to be done, and there's plenty of patients to do this, where the vaccine indeed reduced hospitalizations and deaths. It hasn't been done. The signal hasn't even been there in the randomized trials where that's not a primary endpoint. And now we have data flooding in from Canada, Europe, South America, Israel, showing the vast majority of patients in the hospital are fully vaccinated. In fact, the unvaccinated are having much milder syndromes, not ending up in the hospital. All right.
I can tell you, this is a terrific interview. We've been listening to Roman Balmakov of Facts Matter with Epoch Times, with myself and my co-author of Courage to Face COVID-19, Preventing Hospitalizations and Deaths While Battling the Biopharmaceutical Complex. And that co-author is none other than true crime author, best-selling author, John Leek. Let's pick up on the other side of this interview.
So you mentioned some of the adverse reactions that are coming out of the different countries. So tangentially to that, I wanted to ask you, because I'm right now doing a deep dive into the VAERS system, because I want to put together a comprehensive episode about it. And one thing that's really hard for me to kind of grasp my hand around is let's say currently there's about 29,000 deaths listed for the COVID vaccines in the VAERS system, at least officially. But there's like kind of two factors. One is there's an underreporting to the VAERS system. And the second part is like most likely out of those 29,000, not all of those are really related to the vaccine. So it's like, what is that ratio? What percentage of the overall does the 29,000 represent?
Okay, so the Vaccine Averse Event Reporting System, what we know in a paper from Meissner and colleagues before COVID, that 86% of the time, the VAERS report is made by a doctor, a nurse, or a healthcare professional. So that's serious, that I've done VAERS reports. I only do VAERS reports when I think the vaccine has caused the problem. By having a entry in VAERS, that's prima facie evidence that someone thinks the vaccine caused the problem. Now, VAERS includes the United States, Japan, Germany, and some other countries. So when we restrict it to U.S. residents, which can be done in the queries, and I'm an epidemiologist, I've done these queries myself, I'm qualified in doing it, we have about 13,000 Americans that have died after the vaccine. If we look at death alone, we must apply what's called the Bradford Hill criteria for causality. It's a formal assessment of causality. The first question that we address is it biologically plausible? Well, the answer is yes. These are all genetic vaccines. They install the genetic code for the fatal Wuhan Institute of Virology spike protein. They have a dangerous mechanism of action. If one gets an installation of the genetic code too much in the wrong place at the wrong time for the wrong duration, it clearly can be fatal. And there are published papers in the medical literature saying it's fatal. So 100% we've got the dangerous mechanism of action. Temporal association is within VAERS. The vast majority of deaths occur shortly after taking the shot. Internal consistency, meaning are there near misses, heart attacks, strokes that aren't fatal that could have been fatal? Yes, plenty of them in VAERS. Is it externally consistent? Does it agree with the yellow card system, the EU UDRA system, the WHO Vigisay system? Yes, they all agree. World Health Organization says that together there's over 40,000 deaths. Let me tell you, World Council for Health basically has outlined this in their June 11th pharmacovigilance report. They have said that you get to a handful of deaths, these should have been pulled off the market.
Let's imagine we have a God's eye view and we know for sure there's 100,000 deaths. We just know that's the true number. What number would be reported in VAERS? What's your opinion?
The underreporting, and there's been a lot of stabs at this, can be on the high end, 100-1 underreported, down to 5-1 underreported. I can tell you in a paper from Columbia, the upper limit of the confidence interval of the number of Americans who have died after the vaccine through December was roughly 187,000 Americans. That is cohesive with the data we're getting from life insurance companies that are receiving record claims of people dying for reasons that they haven't died from before. Most of the deaths are not explained. And when we hear a vignette of a young person who's died, it's typically a long history of cancer or congenital heart disease or suicide or drug overdose or homicide. But these deaths that we see now, there's no cause. The only thing in the background is, did they take one of these vaccines?
Wow. And there is something I'd like to add to that, which I think has a kind of eerie, sinister quality to it. Because of what we're doing, I'm frequently contacted by people, young people, maybe in their 30s, 40s, maybe 50 years old, who have been injured, or their wife or husband has been injured. But what they're experiencing, and I'm hearing this story very frequently, is that their treating doctor is assuring them it's not the vaccine. So there is this distortion of perception where the medical doctor asserts his medical authority to assure them, you know, your 50-year-old husband, who's almost a professional level surfer, who just had a massive heart attack, that had nothing to do with the vaccine that he got 3 weeks ago. And so this is happening. It's a distortion of the citizen's perception of what's going on. And I think this has great political significance. I mean, here we are at CPAC. The citizenry needs to be informed of what's going on, not actively deceived.
Yeah. It seems like it's not very scientific to right away come out with, hey, this is definitely not the vaccine. It almost seems like a PR, like the doctor's in the position of being the PR for the vaccine company.
It's even worse because we know now from the Pfizer documents that, which is, under court order released, Pfizer knew about 1,291 new adverse events of interest, new diseases, if you will. And we have patients now developing lymphomatous reactions, various neurologic syndromes. And I can tell you, I see this in my practice where patients see doctor after doctor. The doctors tell the patients.
And we'll pick it up here, this break here, the second hour Liberation Station radio show with Chris Steiner. Playing a clip of Dr. Peter McCullough and John Lee, co-authors of The Courage to Face COVID-19, being interviewed by the Epoch Times Roman Balmakoff. We'll be right back for the second hour of the September 4th, 2022 edition. Stay tuned.
The truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit republicbroadcasting.org today because you can handle the truth.